am Professor Adam Gershowitz from William and Mary's Fine Law School is on the line with us this morning. How are you? Good morning.
I'm good. Nice to be with you.
Nice to be with you, too. Well, this cell phone passcode case from Virginia Beach caught our eye last week. And
First of all, if you would give us some background, just explain to everybody what this case was.
Yes, so there's an increasing happening where police are interested in searching the cell phones of individuals for evidence of crimes. And up till now, most of these cases have been drug cases. But increasingly, there are also cases involving other kinds of stuff, pictures, videos, call histories, other sort of stuff. And this was a case in which a defendant was accused of violence of an assault case. And the victim told the police, look, this guy records a lot of stuff. And he had recorded information on his phone or that was transferred to his phone that could be relevant to the prosecution against him. And the police went and got the phone, but lo and behold, the phone was password protected and they couldn't get into the thing. And so then police and prosecutors went to a judge and said, force this guy to turn over the password to the phone that he's unwilling to do. And that's actually a complicated legal issue that the case had to decide.
Okay, so that's what they decided, and they decided that he did not have to give his password. Is that right?
That's right. There's really not a lot of law at this point because this is really an emerging area. So the U.S. Supreme Court hasn't decided what to do about this, but there's a handful of lower court cases, and there's a lot of back and forth about what the right answer is here. It turns out to be a very complicated question about the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. So most people would think, well, when it comes to searching the phone, we're really interested in search and seizure, and that'd be a Fourth Amendment question. But actually, the Fifth Amendment is what plays in here because forcing the guy to turn over his password is forcing him to give away information in what law professors and lawyers call the confines of his mind. And so forcing him to turn over that information raises questions about whether he's going to incriminate himself under the Fifth Amendment.
Well, what is really weird about this, too, is it sort of depends on what kind of cell phone you have. Because as I understand it, had he had a phone where his thumbprint was used to open his phone, then they could have done it because that's like a fingerprint. I mean, they could have gotten into the phone that way.
That, I think, is going to turn out to be absolutely correct and is sort of a little crazy when you think about it, right? But it actually fits right into where the Supreme Court's Fifth Amendment law sets up for us. And the rule the court has had for years and years, which is the Fifth Amendment applies to what's called testimonial information. Information, as I said, about the confines of your mind, what's going through your thought process. Whereas things that are not testimonial, things like your thumbprint or being placed in a lineup or the sound of your voice or there's potential to have passwords related to other biometric functions in your ear and other speech, those things are considered not to be testimonial by the Supreme Court and therefore actually not protected by the Fifth Amendment at all. So weirdly, a case like this actually does in fact potentially turn on the question of whether the password is a number you have to punch in or your thumbprint.
Wow. All right. We're talking to William & Mary Law Professor Adam Gershowitz about this Fifth Amendment case where a fella maybe a picture or video of domestic violence kind of thing on his phone. They wanted to get into his phone. He had a password protected. Judge says he doesn't have to give you password. How is a cell phone different from a computer?
I don't think in this context it's really different at all. So there's a lot of cases now about police searching cell phones, and the reason for that is, you know, people have got them on them all the time. The laptop or your computer you could travel with just as easily, and, you know, Apple's creating a world in which I at least can't seem to figure out the difference anymore between what's an iPad and an iPhone. They keep growing together. One
right.
gets bigger, the other gets smaller. I don't think the Supreme Court is going to put any legal difference here on whether this is a phone or this is a computer. And in fact, in that big decision that they decided last term about whether police could search your phone without a warrant as part of an arrest, the court seems to suggest to us there really shouldn't be a difference here, that the phone really is a computer, and the decision is not going to turn on that question, I don't think.
But we hear it all the time about police, you know, taking computers from houses and this and that and the other thing. So obviously they're going onto people's computers without permission all the time and have been for a long time.
Yeah, so the question there is they're still allowed to do this, and there's two main ways that they get to do it. Number one, a lot of people, it turns out, just consent. So either they consent or someone that they share the house with consents. And so a lot of these child pornography cases involve situations in which the owner of the laptop or the person's significant other consents and lets the police. And then we don't have a Fourth Amendment problem at all. And the other cases are ones in which a judge has issued a warrant and either the device, the laptop, the phone, whatever, is not sufficiently password protected to stop the police from getting in. And it turns out if the police can crack the password, they're perfectly okay to do that. There's no legal impediment to doing that. And the reason is pretty clear. Let's say the police had a warrant to search your house for drugs, and they got to the house, and the door of your house was locked. The police wouldn't turn around and say, well, the door's locked, I guess we'll just go home. They're going to break down that door, and they're perfectly within their rights to do that. If they're able to crack the password to your phone or your computer, they're also allowed to do that as well. Of course, the problem is the passwords for electronic devices are becoming a lot more complicated than the lock to your front door of your house.
Obviously, a lot of this is minutia within the law and gray areas and everything. So let me throw another theoretical out there for you, Professor.
Sure.
A lot of people now have not even key locks on their houses. They have the digital ones where you have to press in a code that you program. So
yep.
If I have one of those digital kind of entry things on my house, could I say, no, you can't go into my house because I have that password protected?
Well, they couldn't say, no, you can't go into the house. They could say, I don't have to tell you the password to the front door. Of course, they do that at their own peril, because then they're going to have the police breaking down the windows or the back door or the garage.
Right.
In other words, if the police can get in, they're free to do it. But the Fifth Amendment question is a question about whether they can force a person to turn over information in that person's thought process.
Wow.
And there the court is likely to say simply, the Fifth Amendment, even though it's reaching the same result as knocking the thing down, we just don't, as a legal matter, allow that to happen.
So let's say, for instance, if the victim, the woman in this case, by the way, the guy was trying to strangle her. If she had known his password, she could have given that to the police, and they could have taken the phone and used it and gotten into his phone.
So that's a tricky question as well. As Rick said, there's a lot of gradations here, and unfortunately, police have to make these decisions without a lot of clear law. So I think the answer to your question is often yes, but I'd hesitate to say always yes, and here's why. A person can consent to the search of another person's things if they have common authority. So, for instance, my wife can consent to the search of our home. If I lived with my sister, she could consent to it, or my roommate or something like that. But the question becomes whether they'd have common authority over that property. And a cell phone is a trickier question, right? A cell phone is a trickier question as to whether or not one person's phone, the other has common authority. And, you know, we live in a world in which differences occur between spouses and girlfriends and boyfriends and who has that common authority. So whether or not they could authorize a search is a difficult question. Of course, the person probably could, if they knew the password, just tell the password to the police, and then the police would probably be free and clear to then search the phone, as long as they had a warrant in that case.
All right, so it looks like ultimately these digital kind of matters are going to have to go to the Supreme Court before they're settled, huh?
It is, and unfortunately the court doesn't take a lot of criminal cases each year, and they've taken a pretty small number of these complicated technological cases, maybe because they know they're not the best situated to deal with this question. I mean, these are, as somebody in my mid-30s, I can see the world passing me by, and they're a hell of a lot older than I am.
You're right.
To deal with these questions. But the court will have to resolve all of these, but it moves very slowly and very deliberately to be careful that it doesn't set a mistake that's going to be locked in for quite a long time. And
So
the court will decide this, but it could be quite a while.
Before we let you go, where does terrorism fit into this whole thing? Because it seems to me, while there's all this, oh, no, you can't break into a password-protected phone, it seems to me there are going to be cases in today's world where people are suspected terrorists or connection to terrorist organizations, or theoretically even using cell phones to set off or trigger explosive devices, where police need access to cell phones without, you know, tell me your password, tell me your password, tell me your password. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So it's a good question. There is an exigency exception to the Fourth Amendment, and so there is that route to deal with the terrorism cases under the Fourth Amendment. Under the Fifth Amendment, about the password, we could force the guy to give up the password, The question is going to be, is that going to be admissible against him in a criminal trial? And so in the terrorism cases, we're always in a position to say to the suspect, you have to give this to us. The question will later be, well, if we put him on trial, is that going to be admissible against him? So there are really two separate questions about whether law enforcement can keep us safe, and a separate question about whether or not that's going to be admissible in a criminal case against the suspect.
Gotcha. Yep,
oh,
that
boy,
is a
it does
key,
get
key
complex,
right,
doesn't it?
Man, thank you so much for explaining this to us. Fascinating case, man.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Danny Rick.
It really is, and believe me, we'll be calling you again.
Oh, we've got your number now.
Got
you
your
can't
number,
block
Adam.
Us out now. So,
well, thank you.
Thank
All
you,
right,
sir.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Bye-bye.
That's William and Mary Law Professor Adam Gershowitz.